Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate, sitting here with Dr. Leslie Komen. Dr. Leslie Komen is a professor of surgery at Upstate, specifically thoracic surgery, named a Distinguished Service Professor, a well-deserved honor. We're happy to have you back, Dr. Komen. Welcome.
Thank you, Trish.
You know, it's good to have you here for a number of reasons. I think that you remind us of some of these things we need to know about lung cancer that we don't stop to think of often enough. But before we get into lung cancer, I actually want to tell you or ask you to tell us about thoracic surgery, because that's a word we hear. Not all of us understand what it means.
Thoracic surgery comes from the root word thorax, which is the chest. And thoracic surgeons care for anything in the chest, heart, lungs, esophagus, ribs, and most of us subspecialize in something within that area.
Okay.
And I have focused on the lungs, and in particular on lung cancer.
Lung cancer. So really, your thorax is just your chest area.
Exactly.
So it leads me to believe then that anyone who is a surgeon that works in that area knows then how to get through the chest bones and so forth to get to the parts
right,
that you actually
right.
need to fix. That's got to be a specialty all by itself, just getting through there.
Right. And cardiac surgeons, heart surgeons, open heart surgeons of both adults and children are a subset of thoracic surgeons.
Interesting. Okay, well, that explains it. Thank you for clarifying that for me. And, you know, I got thinking, it's been a while since you've been here. We used to get to see you more frequently. But the last time you were here, you were talking about a charitable organization. And the reason I raise it, it was called Longevity, which I thought is a great name. The reason I raise it is because it reminds us that not everyone who develops lung cancer is a smoker.
That's right. There are over 3,000 patients per year just in the United States alone who are non-smokers and who die of lung cancer.
And, you know, I know that another thing you and I have talked about, but I hear this all the time now, and I think of it. Anytime we hear of someone who's died of lung cancer, quite often the first question you'll get is, but was he a smoker? And you pointed out to us, and I think of it every time now, that that's not the first question that should be asked.
It's very irrelevant. Nobody is to be blamed for having a disease. The people to be blamed in this whole situation are the big tobacco companies, which are ruthless in their pursuit of new customers to replace the ones that they have killed off.
Well, I don't want to take away the responsibility of people who perhaps are smokers to quit, because I do think they have some responsibility there. That said, just because someone acquires lung cancer doesn't mean the first thing we should be doing is trying to blame them for having it themselves.
And many of these people quit smoking 10, 20, even 30 years ago when they were told to.
Wow.
And have developed lung cancer later on in life. And those people have actually followed health promotion recommendations, and yet they are still victimized by this dread disease.
And you know, especially older ones, I think that when we think of somebody older who quit all those years ago, still acquires lung cancer, we have to look back to a time in the 50s and 60s when people were actually encouraged to smoke because it was a healthy thing to do.
All those ads with doctors saying this is the cigarette they recommend to soothe the throat.
Oh, man. You know, anyway, all right. I don't want to spend a lot of time dwelling on that because it doesn't really move us forward. This report that we've picked up from the Wall Street Journal, I found fascinating, and it's the reason we asked you to come this morning. It talks about the rates of lung cancer in men and women, and specifically the fact that the rates of lung cancer have been controlled to an extent in men now, but they're finding that women, it's doubled since 1975. So what's the difference? What's the research being done?
Well, one of the major causes of the fall in men and the rise in women for rates of lung cancer is smoking patterns. Men smoked heavily throughout the 1950s and 60s and then began to quit.
Mm-hmm.
Women did not really start smoking in large numbers till much later, mostly into the 70s to start with. And so since it takes a number of years for lung cancer to develop, the lag time means that now we're just really beginning to see that rise in women.
And that's true whether somebody smoked and then quit or continues to smoke? I mean, is it across the board that way?
This is a population trend.
Okay.
And for an individual, there are many factors that influence whether a smoker or a non-smoker gets lung cancer. A lot of them are genetic family characteristics, mm-hmm. And now we're beginning to see that there is even an influence of estrogen, which combined with cigarette smoke tends to promote lung cancer in susceptible people. And since women generally have higher levels of estrogen, both inherent and administered, such as in birth control pills or estrogen therapy, they have higher levels of estrogen, and this may facilitate the promotion of lung cancer in people who have a tendency and also smoke.
Well, that is fascinating. I mean, that introduces a whole new aspect. I almost have to wonder how they even thought to ask the question, except maybe to say, why do women seem to have twice the rate? And only part of that would be explained by what you said, that women adopted smoking later.
Right.
So, okay, what's the big difference would be estrogen levels. Have they looked at all at testosterone? I mean, that's in men, certainly. Women have a little bit of it. Is that being looked at too?
People may have looked at it, but I don't think they found anything significant or we would have heard about it.
You would have heard about it, sure.
The other thing to remember is that far more women non-smokers get lung cancer than men non-smokers. And this is in part due to secondhand smoke exposure, because there are many more non-smoking women who lived with smoking men than the other way around. In Asia, non-smoking women are very susceptible to lung cancer. This is probably not necessarily due only to secondhand smoke, but due to exposure to cooking fires.
Oh, really? Cooking fires. So would there be nicotine in cooking fires, or is there something else there?
No, but the nicotine is not the damaging agent. The nicotine is the addictive component.
But that's not what's causing the lung cancer?
No,
well, see, there's something very different.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. The lung cancer is caused by the smoke.
The smoke itself.
And cooking fires from any kind of biological fuel, oil, gas, wood, coal,
charcoal,
cow dung, charcoal.
Wow.
Is an organic compound, wood smoke, which is a promoter of lung cancer. So Asian women, and even in this country, non-smoking Asian women are the highest group which gets a certain form of lung cancer.
How interesting. I never thought of it in terms of the smoke. That is something brand new to me, and I'm really glad you pointed that out. And now it makes me start to wonder about some of the other places that women could be exposed to smoke, or men too. I mean, I think of campfires out in the woods. Does it mean that we need to be sitting on the other side of the campfire more frequently? I mean, tell us how we can translate some of this into information we can use to avoid this.
Well, I think a campfire is not a continuous exposure.
Well, true.
We only have very small exposure. But I'm sure that even back in cave people days, from smoky fires in caves, those people probably had very black lungs as well from breathing all of that. A bigger component probably we are going to be finding out in the next 10 years or so are all our forms of air pollution that are now contaminating our environment. Mm-hmm. China, which of course has no real clean air laws and use a lot of coal burning, has extremely high rates of lung disease and lung cancer. So there's no question that air pollution of many types is a contributor. We haven't teased out all the factors, and the best way to pollute your lungs is to smoke, of course.
Well, let's go back to this question about the estrogen, because I find that fascinating. There are women get estrogen in a lot of ways. I mean, certainly we have it in our bodies, and we have hormones and so forth. That, and certain stages in our lives, we have higher levels of estrogen than at other stages. But do you think then that we are also exacerbating the problem perhaps by taking birth control pills or hormone replacement therapy later in life, or those kinds of things, that we fool around with the levels of estrogen in our bodies?
It could be. Remember that this is only one component, and there are many, many other factors. We will never get the magic bullet that is the reason for lung cancer.
No.
So this is just one of many.
And there must be different forms of lung cancer as well, or different ways that it takes control of the body.
Right. But as we know, people, young women, are advised not to take birth control pills if they smoke. This is generally for the purpose of reducing the chance of blood clots, but it may also be helpful in terms of lung cancer. So, and estrogen replacement therapy we found is harmful in other ways, so the incidence of that is going down. maybe that will help reduce the incidence of lung cancer in women, but this will take us a couple of decades to find out.
To figure all of those things out. And we have to remember, too, that this is one step at a time. I mean, this has been identified now, but, you know, okay, what direction do you take it from here? And do you start looking at specific kinds of estrogen being applied to the body or swallowed or those kinds of things? Because women, they can identify this, but the only thing they can do themselves is to stop smoking or to let nature take its course.
Right. And remember that it's not the estrogen that causes the lung cancer. Estrogen combines with smoke and then on a background of genetic susceptibility with many other factors we don't even know now,
sure,
might make this more likely. So it's the combination, the family history and genetic tendency, the smoking, and then the estrogen. So perhaps a male and female with the same family history, the same smoke exposure, perhaps there would be a difference. It's going to be hard to tease that out.
It is. You know, it's always fascinating to me. Research, it seems to me that while, yes, it answers one or two questions, it always introduces maybe 10 more. So, and that's exactly what this has done, hasn't
right,
it?
Right.
Well, you know, while we have you here, I'm going to switch gears completely for a moment, if I may. I know that we've talked about Upstate's new cancer center that's being built, and I believe this is going to be a huge boon for this area in many, many ways. And you're the faculty spokesperson for the new cancer center. So while you're here, can we get a little more information from you about it?
Sure. The Upstate Cancer Center is going to be a magnificent new glass-fronted building on the corner of Adams Street and the Circle for the entrance to University Hospital.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be the home for all our outpatient cancer-related patient activities. We do superb cancer care at Upstate with many unique services. However, it is scattered in many locations throughout our campus.
Mm-hmm.
In this new building, radiation therapy, chemotherapy, appointments with all forms of cancer specialists, multidisciplinary patient evaluations will be able to be done right in one place, so the specialists are all together. It's convenient for the patients, and it will be a wonderful new environment for our patients who've been coping with our aging facilities because they know they get the best care here, but will be much more comfortable and aesthetically pleased,
yeah,
in our new facility.
You know, it sounds wonderful. It also reminds me kind of the Children's Hospital being built and opened. It sort of raises all boats, doesn't it? It sort of brings in the best of the best because you're bringing in specialists from all over the world as well.
Right.
It's exciting. So now you'll have that many more faculty, right?
That's right.
That's terrific. And tell me now, you were talking about that these are for outpatient kinds of things, but will there be some research involved as well?
We want to really develop the link between the basic research and the clinical care of patients. That link is called translational research.
Okay.
It translates what we learn in the lab to how we take care of patients at the bedside and in the clinic. We sometimes call it bench to bedside research.
Mm-hmm.
We are the Academic Medical Center of Central New York. We are the only place where basic science research is going on. We are greatly expanding our basic science research into cancer and in particular lung cancer. And we will be hoping to translate what our scientists learn in the lab to care of cancer patients through collaboration with our cancer center and our Upstate Cancer Research Institute.
I think that's just terrific. And when I think of these things, I think too of all the ripple effect of all of that. I mean, this isn't just cancer care for individual patients. This is economic development. This is bringing specialists to the area, the brain gain, as we like to call it. So, and I love that you're involved with it because your enthusiasm is very apparent. So Dr. Leslie Komen, Upstate thoracic surgeon, distinguished service professor, and more. Thank you so much for coming by this morning.
Thank you, Trish.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up, Four Tiny Friendships, or The Magic of Good Morning, and Just a Little Bit More. Well, dear tuner in, for years, I've loved running around the lakes at Green Lakes Park on the weekend. And when I trotted by folks, I'd say, good morning, or how you doing? And until recently, that would be the end of it, even though I usually did a couple of laps and might have seen the same folks a few more times. But recently, I've started adding a little something on the second and the third time around. Wonderful day, isn't it? Or mention something we have in common, like to other runners. Nice and cool for the jog today, huh? Just playing. Now, it's a little risky because sometimes people don't respond or give you one of those blank looks. But you know what? The more I do it, the more I find it's well worth being left hanging occasionally. The other day, I went by a couple with their little boy and I said, "Good morning." 10 minutes later, there they were again. Amazing day, huh? Yeah, summertime. And then there they were again a few minutes later, third time. And I was going to pass by with a silent nod when I noticed their little guy had the most amazing hair. So I pulled up short, yanked off my hat and said, "You and me have the same curly hair. My two sons have it too. Isn't it great?" And then us parents had this fun chat about how our respective grandmothers loved the curls and yada, yada, yada. I know it may not sound like much, and it wasn't, but that was part of the surprise, how easy it was to make a memorable moment from pure spontaneity. Me and Curly eyeing each other's curly cues, and us parents sharing one of parenting's delights. And then off we went, this way and that. And on my way back to the start, didn't a fellow jogger I'd exchanged pleasantries with shout out something funny as I went by, and we laughed. And a few minutes later, as I was doing my cool-down walk, didn't a couple of serious runners and chatties say, "Good running, guy," and give me the thumbs up as they headed past. And 5 minutes later, I was on a bench by the lake snacking, and didn't another runner stop and ask how far I went and share his triumph of having gone further than he'd ever gone. And then his wife tootles over, and we start talking about running and how it actually strengthens your knees rather than the myth that it causes arthritis. And, "My name's Rich." "Hi, Rich." "Colin." "Jackie." And they offered me some strawberries. And, "Good luck in your upcoming race." And off I went. 4 tiny friendships, all in one Saturday morning. And all from venturing a few pleasant words about what we have in common in the here and now. And to think, I was kind of shy in high school. What a life, huh? I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for tuning in.